And we begin this evening with Grace O'Malley for my next guest. The life of the 16th century pirate, matriarch and political leader shines as an inspirational role model for women of the 21st century. I'm joined by Anne Chambers, author of the book Grace O'Malley, the biography of Ireland's pirate queen, 1530 to 1603, a book that has recently been reissued in a special 40th anniversary edition. Anne, you're very, very welcome.
Thank you, Miles.
Take us back to where you discovered Grace O'Malley, because I think it would be pretty familiar, I think, to people nowadays. But that's actually, in many ways, largely through your work. So how did you discover her? Because she wouldn't necessarily have been somebody who would have appeared in school books, in history books, when you got started on this.
Absolutely, Miles, and that's really what motivated me. I'm from the west of Ireland, and we used to go as children to the seaside for our annual holidays to around the Clube area most associated with her. And there I heard the folk tales, and every pile of rubble was said to be, you know, Grace O'Malley's Grainne Whale's castle. And yet when I went to school, I never, like you said, read about her in history. Now, I know lots of women have been airbrushed out of history, but we don't have that many women leaders in Irish history, and she certainly never really appeared. And then motor on, like most people from the west of Ireland, I came to Dublin and I started working in the central bank when Ken Whittaker was governor there. And he knew of my interest in Grace O'Malley. And in my early 20s, I had said to him, you know, that someday I might try and find out, did this woman really exist?
And I was going to ask you, did you actually think that she was a myth or a legend and that she didn't actually exist as an historical character?
Absolutely, because you're thinking of Queen Maeve of Connacht, another powerful woman, but she belongs in the legendary Ireland. And one thought of Grace O'Malley in the same way. But I got going in my early 20s and I did the first edition of the book. And I suppose in a way it was too good a subject to start off with, because really and truly what I found was a woman that was vastly more experienced than I was in my early 20s. You know, we often think of her as the pirate, but we also have to think of her, of course, as a great political tactician. We have to think of her as a great businesswoman, a political tactician, a survivor in an age that was very, very difficult in Irish history, as well as being a wife, a mother, a divorcee, a lover, a grandmother, a great-grandmother.
I was astonished to read that she does not feature in the Annals of the Four Masters, which were written only a couple of decades after her death.
Yes, and about 40 miles up the coast, you know, in Sligo. And the greatest insult to her, I suppose, was that, you know, she appeared as a footnote to her husband's castle and to a husband, which I'm sure she would have frowned on. When you hear of what Sir Henry Sidney said when he met her in 1577 in Galway, that, you know, she brought with her her husband, for she was as well by land as by sea, well more than Mrs. Mate with him. So that's really the Shakespearean way, as they wrote at the time, saying who wore the trousers in that particular marriage.
Okay, you didn't find anything about her in the Annals of the Four Masters, but you did discover historical records and you did discover documentation, and you just discover that she was a real human being.
Absolutely. Without the English state papers, really, Grace O'Malley wouldn't have featured in any history. Thankfully, the Elizabethan state papers of the period, which I researched all these years ago and did a bit more indeed for this edition, they were held in the Public Record Office. They were in the Lambeth Palace Library and various places around England. And then I got access to a private collection of manuscripts in Westport House, courtesy of Grace O'Malley's 13th great-grandson in descent, the late Lord Altamont. And between all of that, this fantastic story that really had been kept alive, and we have to say really that folklore also played its part in keeping the memory of Grace O'Malley alive. You have to have made a huge impact on your life to have been kept alive by folklore, by the retelling of stories from fireside to fireside for 400 years.
Yeah, she's pretty colourful though when it comes to folklore. Yes. So you would imagine that any folklorist would seize on Grace O'Malley, and we've got to keep telling these stories. Interestingly, she may have been written out of history, but she wasn't written out of geography. It's a very interesting map dating from 1599, 1600 or thereabouts. Tell us about the map of Battista Boazio.
Battista Boazio was a map maker of Italian extraction, and he, shortly after Grace O'Malley, met with Queen Elizabeth in 1593 in London. This map was drawn for Ireland. Now, it's easy to say, you know, draw a map of Ireland, but if you see what the previous maps had been, you wouldn't recognise Ireland. So the Battista Boazio map was perhaps the most accurate map of the time. And there, in among all the political bigwigs of the time, is the name Grace O'Malley. So she made such an impact on her times politically that she was included in this political map of Ireland by Boazio.
Tell us about Ireland at that time, because you're talking about the era of the Tudor conquest of Ireland, and she spans from basically from Henry VIII, although she would have been quite young at that stage, right up to the death of Queen Elizabeth I. But you know, although there was a conquest going on, large parts of Ireland would have been either autonomous or semi-autonomous at that stage.
Yes, it was. This is one of the reasons I think that Grace O'Malley was written out of history, because she didn't conform to what later generations of historians wanted Irish women to be, either very charitable, God-fearing, or nationalistic symbols. The 16th century did not have any flag of nationalism. It was an era of divided loyalties, the country divided into about 40 different chieftainships, which Grace O'Malley's father was one. And you had this terrible feuding. If you think back to maybe Braveheart, you will think the same in Scotland, the feuding clans, unable to see the bigger picture, and that a more modern and acquisitive neighbour and more powerful neighbour would take advantage of that divide and conquer. So Grace O'Malley had to operate within this very, very divisive and traumatic period of history, and consequently survival became the spur for everything she did to protect herself, her family, her extended family, and the 200 men that she led by land and by sea.
Okay, by sea is the interesting part, because although we're a seafaring nation, we don't seem to have such an interesting history when it comes to, well, piracy, let's give it a name. But the O'Malleys were a seafaring clan.
Yes, they were very, very different to the other clans in Ireland, and they were seafaring. There are 2,000 years ago of history, the O'Malleys are always referred to as being seafarers. So if Grace O'Malley had been a man, or a son of her father, we possibly wouldn't be speaking about her much tonight. The fact that she was a woman, the sea really was the last barrier really towards women. Women and the sea did not go hand in hand. It was like oil and water. Superstition abounded about women on board ship, and certainly no woman had ever taken the helm. So this is another mitigating factor against Grace O'Malley, and really contributor to her being written out of history. That a woman could lead by sea was almost unheard of, you know. You'd have, again, to go back to the legendary times. There is no other comparable person, a woman like Grace O'Malley, as a leader by sea.
Educated as well, wasn't she?
Oh, yes.
A linguist.
We often, you know, the fiction and the folklore said that she spoke in Latin with Queen Elizabeth. She did not speak in Latin. There was no need for her to speak in Latin. She both knew and read and could speak English. And that is very, very obvious from the many people in the English administration in Ireland, including then, of course, with Queen Elizabeth I and the great Lord Burghley. She corresponded quite a bit with him. And it is very obvious that she spoke and understood English.
Okay, her married life was interesting, to put it mildly. She married twice. Well, first of all, she married Donal O'Flaherty, and then Richard Burke, Iron Richard Burke, and Donal and Cuggy, Donal of the Battles. Were they political matches, or were they love matches?
Well, the first marriage would have been, as the daughter of a chieftain, Grace O'Malley is, of course, we forget as well, Gaelic aristocracy. So therefore, her marriage had to play political dividends for her clan. So she was married off in an arranged match at 15 years of age. She lived with Donal An Cuggy, and you name the name An Cuggy in Irish means of the battles, and he certainly was one of these headless chickens that were of Gaelic chieftains that couldn't see the bigger picture. And he particularly was very war. Like, you know, this was the time that only a man could be, only a male could be a Gaelic chieftain. The days of the women chieftains go back to Queen Maeve of Connacht. That was all swept away when Roman law, and with it, women being put in their place, basically. They couldn't become a chieftain. And Grace O'Malley, of course, just thumbed her nose at both her own tradition and the English incoming tradition, and made herself by example a chieftain. But she superseded Donal an Cogaí because he was so irresponsible. He brought great trauma onto his clan, and it is she who supersedes him. And of course, he was then killed in one of the many feuds at the time. Her second husband was Richard an Éireann Burke, the most powerful man in Connacht at the time, and she chose him. And it was said that after 1 year of marriage, she chose also to divorce him. And we, you know, people say, well, that was the legend and that was the folklore. But of course, the Brehon Law allowed for that. It was the right of either man or woman to be divorced if they so wished. But from my research, I see that they kept together, they came together again. They had one son, Tibbuj na Long, Toby of the Ships, who was born aboard Grace O'Malley's ship indeed, and he inherited his mother's great seafaring tradition and went on to become really a very, very successful man. And indeed, it was one of the chieftains in Gaelic Ireland who didn't lose his lands after Kinsale, thanks to what his mother did for him with Queen Elizabeth I.
Why was she known then as a pirate queen?
Well, piracy and plunder is part and parcel of seafaring life, no matter whether you go to the South China Seas, Cornwall, or the west coast of Ireland. It is part and parcel, but the piracy thing as well was more romantic, you know, and it was more dynamic, and it kept this whole idea of the great pirate queen alive. Of course, she went on plundering raids, and indeed, on one of such plundering raids, I found she was captured by the great Earl of Desmond, who was under suspicion by Elizabeth at the time of being in contact with her great enemy, Philip II of Spain. And Desmond handed Grace O'Malley over to the English to keep the English from his own front door. And she was incarcerated in Dublin Castle for a year. Now, only the most powerful political prisoners were taken, as you know, to Dublin Castle. And she was there for a full year. We'll never know how she got out, but she did. I think her husband went into rebellion in Mayo, and she said to Sir John Perrott, who was the Lord Deputy at the time, listen, I can bring him to heel if you let me out. And that's, I think, what happened.
The piracy at the time, I suppose you could say, was a form of taxation almost.
Yes, it was. And, you know, I found some documentation to show that Grace O'Malley's own father, for example, issued licenses to Spanish, French and English fishermen to fish his rich sea domains. And you see, Galway City was the great emporium for trade on the west coast. But the merchant princes of Galway City had taxes which really prohibited the Gaelic chieftains from trading there, well, at a beneficial, in a beneficial way, let's say. So the O'Malleys in turn said, well, if your ships have to travel our sea territory, then we'll take tolls on them. And Grace O'Malley was a great exponent of that and became a very wealthy woman indeed on her toll-taking enterprise.
Talk to me about the relationship that she had with the English governor, the Queen's representative in Connacht, the man called Richard Bingham.
Well, she got on very well with the previous ones, Lord Deputy Sidney, the famous Sir Henry Sidney, who was the father, of course, of the very famous Sir Philip Sidney, was here on three separate occasions as Lord Deputy, and she got on very, very well with him and managed to do deals with him. But when Sir Richard Bingham came, he came with two additional problems for Grace O'Malley. Firstly, he didn't like her. He didn't like the idea of a woman leader. And secondly, he was part of what even Elizabeth didn't like in her court, of the Puritan side of English politics that was happening at the time. So he was doubly antagonistic to Ireland, and he said the Irish could only be tamed by the sword. So three times Grace O'Malley led rebellions against him in Mayo. He did capture her at once, and she talks herself, she tells Queen Elizabeth he erected a gallows where she thought she would end her days. And she was let at liberty because all the chieftains of Mayo came and gave Bingham hostages to release her. She was so important as an iconic leader for them at that stage. So eventually Bingham killed her eldest son, Owen O'Flaherty, and when he captured Tibbet na Long, her favourite younger son, it was then that she decided to go over his head and appeal to his boss in England, who was Queen Elizabeth I.
And not just by letter, but in person. And this is one of the astonishing things about Grainne na Mhaoil, about Grace O'Malley, that she actually goes to London. I mean, she goes under her own steam, as it were.
Yes, she does. Now, firstly, they meet at they're elderly. They're in their 60s. 60s in the 16th century is like in the 80s today. So we're talking about two experienced women, both in a man's world. Grace O'Malley did not go willy-nilly and bang on the door of Greenwich Palace and say, I'm the Queen of the West and I'm here to see the Queen of England. You wouldn't do that today with Queen Elizabeth II. There was a protocol that had to go through. But such is Grace O'Malley's intuitiveness and her connection with the wider world outside her remoter area. Don't forget, the sea to her was always a highway, never a barrier, a highway to new languages, cultures, to people. And she knew her way around it. And she knew that the Earl of Ormond was related to Queen Elizabeth I. And I found a lovely little letter of introduction by Black Tom, Earl of Ormond, to ask Lord Burghley, Queen Elizabeth's secretary, to see this woman. So she went with a covering letter of introduction by the great Earl of Ormond, who was Queen Elizabeth's cousin and favourite at court. And she hung around the court in July 1593. And I found what Burghley sent her. Before she got to see the Queen, Burghley wrote out 18 questions that he wanted Grace O'Malley to reply to. And her replies are there. So in effect, in the state papers, is almost a potted autobiography of Grace O'Malley herself. And she talks about laws, the Breton law versus English law. She talks about her family. She talks, of course, about Bingham and what the awful things that he had done to her family. And eventually, she meets with Elizabeth.
And secures the release of her children?
Yes, the letter that Elizabeth wrote about the meeting, which I've published now in this new edition of the book, really shows a new Elizabeth. We here always think of her in Irish history as something else. She was a woman in a man's world, and she really did give to Grace O'Malley everything that she wanted. Her son was released from prison, and more than anything else, Grace O'Malley managed to get her, and Elizabeth says it herself, that she can go back to the sea, which Bingham had almost barred her from doing, this time to fight, as Elizabeth wrote, in our quarrel with all the world. But once back on the wild west coast of Ireland, you can imagine the interpretation that was given.
And was this female solidarity, do you think, on the part of Queen Elizabeth?
I think there is, yes, there is. There's a little bit of cattiness there. Both of them were the same age, and I noticed in the letter Elizabeth says to Bingham, have pity and on this poor aged woman. Now, both of them were the same age. So we had a little bit of the female spat there as well.
Are there modern resonances, do you think, with Grace O'Malley's
story? Oh, most certainly.
I mean, there aren't too many pirates. Well, not in this part of the world,
well,
anyway.
You know, we leave the piracy aside. As I said, that was part and parcel of seafaring life everywhere. But Grace O'Malley, really, as a woman, when you see the awful situation politically in which she had to survive to protect her family, she comes over as the great matriarchal figure, not merely of her own family, but to the wider clans in the area. You see her as a very, very successful businesswoman. She accumulated a herd of cattle, which, of course, everything was numbered in cattle during that time. There was very little currency around. And she really was a fantastically tuned in woman and clued in woman. The fact that men from different clans, with all their feudal tribing going on, would agree to be led by a woman, by land and by sea, in the 16th century shows great courage, great charisma, and above all else, she had to be successful.
And the book is Grace O'Malley, the biography of Ireland's pirate queen. It's out now in a lovely 40th anniversary edition published by Gill Books. The author is Anne Chambers. Anne, many thanks for joining us this evening on The History Show.